This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is actually Thursday morning. And I'm not at work. I had a breakfast scheduled with a friend this morning. He's an IT consultant as well, has his own business. He's working crazy hours at this point, but we get together about once a month and chat about this, that, and the other, and I always enjoy my breakfast with him. And I got in and I was kind of waiting. I didn't actually go into the restaurant because I always text when I'm going to restaurants and I say, hey, I'm on my way, you know, and that kind of helps me because if I don't get a text back, it's like, you know. And certainly I've done this enough that there are times when people oversleep or they forget or, you know, it's just all that stuff happens. And he had actually overslept this morning because he's just working crazy hours. And so I, you know, was waiting around for a little bit and I didn't bother to go in because I wasn't sure. But, you know, then once I got to the place where he was 15, 20 minutes late and I hadn't heard from him, I went, okay, so... but I had my recorder here in the car, so I'm actually driving back home at this point as opposed to going straight into work, because my mother-in-law has COVID. So she has COVID. I was actually around her Friday and Saturday, but not really that close. I wasn't within 6 feet of her, and I was at her house for more than 15 minutes, but I wasn't really too concerned about getting COVID from her. And in fact, I did take a COVID test, one of those at-home COVID tests, and it was negative last night. I'm going to take another one tonight because tomorrow is King Kamehameha Day. However, so I wasn't really that concerned that I actually had it. However... One of our guys in the office is going over to see his daughter in South Korea. And he's having to take some COVID tests really soon. And man, if there was any chance, you know, I just didn't want to risk it. I can work from home. I'm fine working from home. So I just told the guy that I'm currently answering to, there at headquarters, I told him, you know what? Not coming here. Because I don't want to risk the possibility. So anyways, putting the final touches on the Fairy Day costume. I have to get the get up all on tonight, see where we are. I still have to figure out if I can actually glue elf ears to my ears and try to match. They're just made out of latex, I think, or silicone, something. But I've got to tomorrow see if I can get some makeup that will actually match my ear color so that we can make them look a little more realistic. And then I just have like a headband to make. And I've got one little piece. I think I've got it figured out now. I had made some wings, but you know, they were going to be pretty hard to put in. I wasn't able to get them in, and I was practicing, and then I realized a bunch of stuff and it's like, oh, silly, do it this way. But I haven't had a chance just to see if I can actually get the wings in by myself in back. So, but all in all, I think everything turned out good there. I think people will enjoy it. And so, you know, that's good. We're good there. I am in the process of editing at this point, and so I'm putting in all the corrections. I should have 3 or 4 more days of that, and then I'll start a read-through, and then once I get the read-through done, you know, we'll do the final edits on the cover, and final formatting, and then it's back to book 17, so that all is going fine. Work has been fine. I have been, like I said, working at home. I went in Monday, and then Tuesday found out that Lynette's mom had tested positive for COVID, so I worked Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'll be working Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday at home. But everything's puttering along. Got a few little challenges we're working on, but you know what? It's going to be fine. So that's all going well. Last night I was looking at articles and things, thinking about what I would talk about today. But then I got thinking about the fact that this is a very, was a very interesting week, this Thursday to Thursday. Because there's some, like, big pieces of stuff that happened this week. And one of the little things was actually prior to this week, but, and it's really fascinating to see where we are right now and all the things that are moving and in play. It reminds me of the scripture that talks about that the very foundations will be shaken and that everything will be shaking. It's really a fascinating time. So, in just kind of a little minor issue, as you know, if you spent any time listening to this podcast, I'm a big fan of Jordan Peterson. I think he's doing a tremendous work. But I felt like he kind of tripped up a little bit, and I think he's trying to justify it, but I think this just illustrates how easily the flesh can find an opening and stick in the knife and get us to do stuff that's not beneficial. So Sports Illustrated was trumpeting the fact that they had a plus-size model on the cover. And, you know, the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition really is not about anything except celebrating lust. I mean, that's really all it's about. It's about these reproductive systems and how we can tune images to make them more evocative to men and then make them more fear-inducing and envy-inducing in women. It's all about that. It's about a very narrow percentage of people who are able to produce physical results, somewhat from genetics, somewhat from training, somewhat from diet, but that put them in the vanishingly small percentage of people that happen to hit at the moment whatever the standards of highest lust-inducing images are. I won't use the term beauty, because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And having grown up overseas, I'm just checking to see. Couldn't remember if I checked the mail last night, so I'm just checking as long as I'm here. You know, having grown up overseas, beauty is certainly something that has various definitions around the world. There are things that are standard. There are beauties. Things that are standard, definitely. It's such a gorgeous morning. You just gotta roll down the windows, listen to the birds chirp a little bit and talk. So, like symmetrical faces, it's across all cultures that we judge symmetrical faces and symmetry in general as being balanced and quote unquote beautiful. Because some would say that shows a certain healthfulness, shows a certain genetic value if there's symmetry in the face. And there's things like the hip-to-waist ratio, which I think is something like 0.68 or something, that is the ideal. Because that seems to be related to reproductive fitness, those things. So certainly all those things exist. But of course, the purpose of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Edition is to sell magazines. Well, I just adjusted the recorder just a tad because it wasn't straight on. Anyways, so a couple of weeks ago, Sports Illustrated was celebrating the fact that they had their first plus-sized model on the cover. And Jordan Peterson popped off a tweet that said, sorry, something like, sorry, not beautiful. Well, that just ignited a firestorm, of course. And today, actually, I found a video where he was talking to his daughter and explaining why he had made that tweet. And from his perspective, the reason he had made that tweet, I'm going to hopefully do this justice, was that Sports Illustrated, because it's a sports magazine, has celebrated the athletic female body. And that in the past, the swimsuit edition has always been about celebrating the top level athletes, the women top level athletes. And now what they're doing is, he feels like, is ramming inclusiveness, you know, at us. And so he felt like that needed a response, that he wasn't just going to take this, in I think in his mind, ridiculous pushing of all types of bodies as being beautiful because there's a health issue involved, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But beauty is definable term, and maybe I don't have enough exposure to the Sports Illustrated swimsuit editions, but I didn't get the impression that the women that I have seen on the Sports Illustrated swimsuit editions are necessarily top flight athletes in terms of physicality. I mean, when you look at people like the ladies who compete in CrossFit. Okay, yeah. I mean, when you see them, it's like, whoa, obviously these are women who are so incredibly fit and so amazing in terms of the dedication. If Sports Illustrated completely dedicated their swimsuit edition to those types of women, I think that Jordan Peterson's claim would be more genuine. But I personally have never seen that many photos coming out of the swimsuit edition that feature women who are tremendous athletes and who are fit like the women from CrossFit are fit. What the pictures I have seen are simply done to create the most lust-inducing images possible. And if your standard is to produce a lust-inducing image, the fact is that there are all kinds of men and women in the world, and there are all types of body types that produce lust-inducing images. So personally, I don't care what they put on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I don't care. The fact that they touted that, I'm sure, boosted all their sales, which is what that's for. So that was a little interesting. That was just like a little cleanup today from something that showed up, and I was talking to a friend about it, and I just said, yeah, I just think Jordan Peterson let his flesh get a hold of him there, and he tumbled into a tweet that he didn't really need to make, but we all make mistakes. So, ta-da. The other thing that happened this week that feels like to me it's something important is Matt Walsh's What is a Woman documentary aired. And I think it's telling that some hacker or group of hackers decided that it was so horrific to ask the question, what is a woman, that they decided that they were going to do a denial of service attack on the Daily Wire servers so that they could, they weren't going to stop the release of the movie, but they were just going to make it, you know, they were just going to clog up the servers. And Ben Shapiro had said the next day, I dialed in and I was going to watch the premiere. And it was terrible. It was stopping and starting and glitching and all that kind of stuff. And someone in the comments even mentioned a denial of service attack. So I was listening the next day, and I think Ben Shapiro was saying they were getting something like a million hits per minute, on their servers. And, you know, that's enough to grind anything to a halt unless you've got massive, massive servers. So, but the essence of that movie really reveals, I mean, some of the stuff in the interviews about where we are with gender ideology and the trans movement and all that kind of stuff. It's really astonishing. You know, Matt Walsh is at the National Women's March. And so he walks up to some women at the Women's March, and he says, so what is a woman? And all the women just kind of go into gridlock, and they kind of laugh, and they kind of look at him, and no one wants to say. And he said, well, you're at the National Women's March, so what is a woman? And a lot of the answers sometimes that he gives, well, it's anyone who identifies as a woman. And he'd say, right, but what is that? And finally, with one professor, they just kept going around and around in circles. And he finally asked the professor, he said, give me a definition for woman that doesn't include the word woman. And the guy was like, you know. It's all just very fascinating. It's just a very fascinating moment in our culture where it's going to be interesting to see where this goes. And I'm not sure I know where it goes. It's fascinating. So the other thing that was fascinating this week is I watched 2000 Mules by Dinesh D'Souza. Worth seeing, by the way, worth the $20 if you're not a subscriber to Dinesh D'Souza's podcast. So I would highly recommend that people spend the $20 to watch this movie. I was just listening to a podcast, and he was saying that they did a survey, and apparently at this point, 15% of voters have seen the movie. And out of Republicans, it was like 80% of them. Well, in case you don't know what 2000 Mules is about, Dinesh D'Souza did a documentary with a group called True the Vote. And what True the Vote did is they bought a ton of cell phone data. I mean, a ton of cell phone data. It was like terabytes of data. And it was anonymized data where you had like the ID of the phone, and they were tracking movement of cell phones in the month prior to the election and then through the January 6th runoffs in Georgia and that sort of thing. And what they were doing is they were tracking the movement of cell phones. And so they put geofencing indicators around polling places in Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And they put the locations of these drop-off boxes into the system, and then they put locations of nonprofit organizations into the system. And they set a criteria to say that they wanted to see all the cell phones where that cell phone had gone to 10 or more mail-in drop-off ballot boxes and 5 or more of these nonprofits that promote voting. Hey, this is a very high standard. And they popped out close to 2,000 people just in those locations in Arizona, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Pennsylvania, I think were the four. Just in those locations. And some of them, the average visit was 34. You've got cell phone records of people going to 34 different drop-off locations. And then also going to nonprofit organizations. And all of these drop-off locations were mandated to have video. Many of them did not, even though the law required that there be surveillance video 24 hours a day, but many of them did not. But they have surveillance video of people going to vote at 1 o'clock in the morning or at 3 o'clock in the morning. And these people pull up and they're like stuffing, you know, a dozen ballots into these mailboxes. And then they're driving over to another mailbox and stuffing half a dozen mailboxes. It's like, yeah, whoa, at the very least. Somebody should open an investigation, at the very least. What's interesting is of the people who have seen this movie, there was an independent poll that was done. Of the people who have seen the movie, 80-ish percent of Republicans, Dinesh D'Souza was just talking about this, on was listening, 80-plus percent of Republicans feel like this should be investigated and that there was voting fraud. There's like 60 plus percentage of Democrats said, yeah, this is voting fraud. And like 70 something percent of independents did too. So this is going to be really interesting. And of course, this week as well, we're opening the January 6th Inquisition, the televised, television produced. Oh, man, it's so interesting. It's just so interesting, all the things that are shaking in our country right now. And, of course, that's against a backdrop of energy prices and inflation. And, I mean, just wow. You know, and I've heard people say before that there's possibly a reason why it's hard to find the United States in the book of Revelation. You know, I mean, this has been a tremendous country. It's just an amazing country. But there are so many things that are upside down and backwards at this point in this country. And so, it's fascinating. It's just fascinating. The other thing that I came across this week, that it's like, oh, that's bad. I guess there was a big conference in England that Brent Weinstein, I think, characterized as COVID dissidents who all got together to talk. And Robert Malone, who was part of the creation of the mRNA vaccine stuff, he did not help develop the vaccine for COVID, the mRNA vaccine for COVID, but he was instrumental in the development of the technology. I was watching an interview between him and Brent Weinstein, and they were talking about this small, very important detail about the mRNA stuff, and I don't know that I can reproduce it exactly, but Brent Weinstein had an excellent analogy, and that is that the programming that is in that mRNA that creates the spike proteins when you get vaccinated that helps your body to recognize them and then keep you from dying from COVID, that protein actually has some anomalies in it. The coding for that has some anomalies in it because of how it's created. And it comes down to the fact that there was something about the way the spike protein was created, the way this mRNA stuff is created was highly inflammatory. And so they added substances to the creation of this mRNA fragment to help it be less inflammatory. And what they didn't realize is that was fundamentally altering how the body generates those spike proteins. And in fact, those spike proteins, the idea now that's being investigated is that specifically the spike proteins that are generated from the vaccines, from the mRNA vaccines, specifically those spike proteins, the body doesn't purge them out like it would if you had COVID. I mean, when I had COVID, it took, I could tell. I mean, it took month and a half. But, you know, the stretches when I felt normal just kept getting longer and longer and longer. And then I was like, hey, I'm good. Moving on. So there is some speculation now that the potential is that those spike proteins that get created don't necessarily get flushed out of the body. And this was never tested for. Everybody just assumed that you'd get these cells making the spike proteins, and then the body would figure out, oh, I need to protect against that, and then everything would get flushed out, and you would just have these antibodies, and you'd be good to go. But it sounded like what they were talking about was the fact that you've got these spike proteins and they don't necessarily get flushed out in the time schedule we thought that they got flushed out. And they might hang around for weeks, potentially months, causing all sorts of mischief in the body depending on where they settle in. Because the body identifies what is an invader cell that needs to be attacked with some very simple criteria. If it doesn't recognize everything that's on the surface of that cell, it attacks it. And if you've got stuff that your body doesn't clean out like it would normally clean out, that can be a problem. So it's going to be just really fascinating. And maybe this explains the all-cause mortality survey that I was listening about, where there was a survey that was done. Sorry, I don't have all the details. This came from the Weinstein, from the Dark Horse podcast as well. There was a survey done on all-cause mortality where they compared unvaccinated to vaccinated, but they split up the two groups between the adenovirus vaccines like Johnson & Johnson, which is more closely related to a traditional vaccine, and the mRNA vaccines. And they found that there was a drop in all-cause mortality when you look at the adenoviruses. It was something like 37%. There was a drop, which you would expect if it helped you not to die from COVID, because so many people were dying from COVID, that if the vaccine actually worked and you saw the corresponding drop in mortality, that's what you would expect. Then, of course, they look at the unvaccinated people, and that's kind of the baseline. And then, you know, they look at the mRNA stuff, and they found that all-cause mortality, not just deaths from COVID, but all-cause mortality, was actually at 103%, where 100 is the baseline. And maybe there's just a statistical problem there, but even if it's 100%, if the mRNA vaccine saves so many people from dying, why is the all-cause mortality basically the same as it is for unvaccinated people? And one conclusion, perhaps, is that, in fact, there are other deaths that are being caused by the vaccines that are going unnoticed because people are not testing positive for COVID. So there's a whole bunch of really interesting stuff going on in the world. And it's just really fascinating. I just wanted to do this podcast to say this week, these are all the things that I've encountered this week that just make you stop and go, wow. But the good news is that God is good and he's kind and he's gentle and he's loving. And our best place in life is to remain under that umbrella of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. That's our best place in life. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.